Well, I think there's a lot of what I would call anxiety in the center and the left of the political spectrum in Alaska.
Weighing in on the gubernatorial campaigns, a proposal for either Walker or Begich to drop out. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 7th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, an attempt to increase hours at state legislative information offices is voted down.
I'm concerned that we're still in a budget deficit and that these are reoccurring expenses on the operating budget.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. SEARCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SEARCH. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
A prominent Alaska Democrat had an idea that could have shaken up the race for governor. It could have led either Governor Bill Walker or former U.S. Senator Mark Begich to drop out of the race. Begich supports the idea, but Walker rejected it. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman spoke with the campaigns.
4 years ago, independent candidate Bill Walker joined forces with Democrat Byron Mallott, shrinking a three-way race down to two major candidates. Walker then defeated incumbent Sean Parnell. Hollis French dropped out as Mallott's running mate to allow that to happen. Now French has a new proposal.
Well, I think there's a lot of what I would call anxiety in the center and the left of the political spectrum in Alaska.
To eliminate that anxiety, French wants Walker and Begich to agree that one of the two candidates could drop out. That decision would be based on a measurement of which one is the stronger candidate. French says the candidates could decide how to do that, but he says if three different polls find that one candidate is polling worse than the other, the lower polling candidate would commit to dropping out.
You know, I got a yes from Mark Begich, and I guess I would characterize it as a no from the Walker campaign.
Under French's proposal, both candidates would stay in the race if the polling was mixed. French supports Begich, but he said he'd vote for Walker if it was between Walker and either of the leading Republican candidates, Mike Dunleavy and Mead Treadwell. Begich says it took a couple of days to think about the idea.
You know, I don't want people to get the misunderstanding that I don't believe I can win. I believe I'm going to be, you know, in a three-way race. I have a great shot of winning it straight out, and I wanted to make that very clear to Hollis, but I was happy for the greater good to consider the idea that he laid on the table.
Begich says he hoped Walker would agree to the proposal.
I was hoping that he would consider it, but it's a determination he needs to make, just as he decided not to run in the Democratic primary after committing to it. He decided to switch and create the three-way race, which I think is what's caused a lot of the dilemma here.
Begich says he decided to run after concluding that he could win either a two-way race or a three-way race. But he also says he was concerned about Walker's ability to win a two-way race. The AFL-CIO commissioned a poll in late June. It found Dunleavy would win a three-way race, with Walker and Begich tied for second, but that both Walker and Begich were ahead of Dunleavy in a two-way race. Walker campaign manager John Henry Heckendorn says the governor will convince Alaskans that he's made necessary decisions.
First, I want to be absolutely clear. Mark Begich knew that if he got into the race, Bill Walker was going to run against him in the general, not in the Democratic primary. Walker was interested in a race for who had the strongest vision for Alaska's future, not a competition for who was the best Democrat between him and Mark Begich. And Mark Begich knew that.
Heckendorn says Walker wasn't the candidate who created the three-way race.
The governor filed in August of last year. Mark Begich filed a half hour before the filing deadline. He absolutely had control over whether or not to put Alaskans in that position.
September 4th is the deadline for candidates to remove their names from the general election ballot. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Anchorage Daily News columnist Charles Woolforth originally reported French's proposal. For one Haines candidate, it's too late to drop out, and now he's asking the public to not vote for him. It's past the deadline to withdraw as a candidate in the primary election, But 28-year-old James Hart says he no longer wants to be considered. Hart had been running for Alaska House District 33 in Southeast Alaska. He says a summer job in Sitka complicated campaigning in his district, but Hart says the experience allowed him to get his foot in the door and understand areas he needs to work on for the future. Hart says he still wants to be involved in politics in a different capacity, but he's still figuring out what that looks like. The state primary election is August 21st. Early voting started yesterday. A proposal to keep the offices that link constituents with lawmakers open on Friday afternoons fell short in the Alaska Legislative Council yesterday. But the proposal did lead the council to vote to close the office in Unalaska. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon voted to close the Unalaska office and against adding hours to the others.
I'm concerned that we're still in a budget deficit and that these are reoccurring expenses on the operating budget. And while I think the closure is a good recommendation in this time that we're walking through with finances in Alaska, I have a hard time supporting adding full time.
The nonpartisan Legislative Affairs Agency made a two-part proposal. The first part would close the Unalaska Legislative Information Office, and the second part would have used that savings to keep the other 22 LIOs open on Friday afternoons when the legislature is out of session. Only 8 of the 14 council members were present. All of their votes were necessary to take action. The Unalaska closure passed, but 2 members voted against the expanded hours. The legislature voted to cut back the Friday hours just over 2 years ago. Unalaska was the most recent legislative information office to open in 2011. But residents didn't make much use of it. There was not a single person who testified from the Unalaska LIO this year. In a separate action, the council voted to approve nearly $1 million to pay for a new electronic voting system to track legislators' votes during floor sessions. The old system was outdated and failing, according to the Legislative Affairs Agency. A new Alaska law aims to increase transparency about medical costs and expand access to behavioral health services. Governor Bill Walker signed SB 105 into law yesterday. It combines 3 different pieces of healthcare legislation and requires healthcare providers to post signs letting patients know they can request estimates of medical costs in advance. Patients must receive the estimates within 10 days of asking. It also requires providers to post the costs of their most common procedures. In addition, the law allows independent, licensed marital and family counselors to bill Medicaid directly. The goal is to increase the number of behavioral health providers who will accept Medicaid patients. There's currently a shortage of Medicaid-eligible behavioral health providers in the state. Behavioral health services include treatment for substance abuse, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorders, and other mental conditions. The political arm of the National Rifle Association says it's running a TV ad in Alaska urging Senator Lisa Murkowski to confirm President Trump's U.S. Supreme Court nominee. It's part of a national and regional advertising campaign. The NRA is not the only group trying to influence Murkowski. Healthcare advocacy group Protect Our Care says it's running ads to urge a no vote on Trump's nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. Planned Parenthood is also advocating the Murkowski vote to reject Kavanaugh. Murkowski's position as a Republican who's voiced support for reproductive rights and sometimes votes against her party makes her a key vote in Kavanaugh's confirmation process. She says she wants to meet with Kavanaugh and speak with him in detail on various issues. Murkowski also has said she plans to review his decisions and writings off the bench, listen to his responses to Senate Judiciary Committee members, and consider the views of Alaskans in determining whether to support him. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a look at the close-knit Togiak fishery as its season winds down.
It's a beautiful day. We haven't had sunshine
in over 2 weeks.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
A state agency is extending the deadline for the proposed Donlin Mines draft reclamation plans. The project would be one of the biggest gold mines in the world, right in the middle of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The Alaska Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, says the public can submit comments until September 6th. The agency also extended the deadline for comments on how Donlin plans to pay for the cleanup. Last week, the Yukon-Kuskokwim River Alliance, a local working group who opposes the mine, sent a letter to DNR and the Department of Environmental Conservation saying there simply wasn't enough time for the public to weigh in, specifically in the YK Delta. It's the height of the subsistence season, and most people are gathering berries and fishing to stock up for the winter, the letter says, which means people can't find the time to read and comment on a 400-page document. The local working group is also asking for a public hearing. Faith Martineau, the executive director for the permitting process at DNR, says the agency is considering that request. Meanwhile, the Army Corps of Engineers is on track to roll out its record of decision on the mine next week. The decision will determine how the project moves forward. In October, Bethel residents have a big decision to make, whether or not alcohol sales will remain legal. Now, a nonprofit wants to study how Bethel and the surrounding region have dealt with the local option, both in the past and present. KYUK's Christy Schallenberger has the details.
When the AC Quick Stop liquor store closed in May, Bethel residents, like Sherry Neff, noticed an immediate change.
It was almost like someone had lifted a blanket off the community. It just felt so much more peaceful.
When the liquor store opened 2 years ago, local emergency services, law enforcement, and social services saw a sharp rise in alcohol-related incidents, mostly public intoxication. The city council opposed the license renewal of the liquor store, and the state went along with that. Alcohol sales have been limited ever since, but they could be shut down entirely in October when residents hit the polls to decide whether or not to allow alcohol sales. Meanwhile, a small nonprofit in Anchorage thinks Bethel can fill in key informational gaps about how rural Alaska deals with alcohol, specifically local option.
As far as we have found so far, no one is studying kind of what those numbers are, what the changes are.
That's Tiffany Hall. She's the executive director of Recover Alaska, a nonprofit that wants to cut down on alcohol abuse in the state. Just this past year, Recover Alaska tried to help push a massive bill through the legislature that was 6 years in the making, Senate Bill 76. It would have revised alcohol regulations in Alaska. The bill died in the state house at the last minute after clearing the Senate. Its sponsor, Senator Peter Michicki, withdrew it after stakeholders couldn't agree on a House amendment. And while that bill addressed a lot of issues with Alaska's alcohol regulations, it didn't address local option. Why?
Because we are based in Anchorage and we hadn't gotten enough input yet from people who live in local option communities.
So Hall chose Bethel for a kind of case study about local option. Bethel's history with it dates back to 1960, when a proposal to allow liquor sales failed by 25 votes. And the town has toggled between allowing liquor sales in various capacities since then. Hall says she reached out to the Bethel ONC tribe and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation about a year ago about gathering data from Bethel and the surrounding villages so that she could get information about the impact of local option on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. It took a while, but Hall finally visited Bethel last week at the behest of those two organizations. She says Recover Alaska is also working with the Institute for Circumpolar Health and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. But Hall says finding the data will be a challenge.
So in some cases, those are electronic files. And in other cases, that means boxes of handwritten paper.
Hall also plans to talk to villages in the YK Delta, but doesn't expect to find many records there because of sparse resources.
So we will be trying to just have conversation and get some qualitative data where possible.
Hall says that Recover Alaska could have its initial findings from these secondary sources as soon as this December. But she says it will take a lot of time to gather all the data the group needs. And once they're done, Hall says they still have to figure out who gets the data.
We are not yet exactly sure how we plan to roll that out.
Meanwhile, the group is reaching out to local stakeholders, like the Tundra Women's Coalition and Search and Rescue, for any information and insight that they have on the town's local option history. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
The Surgeon General is touring parts of Alaska this week talking about solutions to the opioid epidemic. He spoke at the Alaska Prevention Summit in Palmer today. Surgeon General Jerome Adams says he sees some progress in combating the epidemic. Doctors are prescribing opioids less frequently, but the drugs are still available.
The first drug dealer for the majority of folks isn't some bad guy out on the street. It's grandma, it's aunt, it's uncle, it's the next door neighbor, it's you all, it's us, who've left medications in our cabinets.
In an effort to solve that, the state's Department of Health and Social Services is distributing drug disposal bags that make opioids unusable. Medications can also be taken back to pharmacies and police departments. Elizabeth Ripley with the Matsu Health Foundation says her organization is trying to prevent opioid addictions by partnering with other groups to address childhood trauma. That means getting at the root of some community problems like racism and the unequal representation of people of color in the foster care and criminal justice systems.
A crucial part of what we have to do is really go upstream and say, we're causing stress for certain segments of our community in disproportional ways, and we have to break down those barriers.
During an interview after the panel conversation, Surgeon General Adams said addressing the opioid crisis has opened the door for larger conversations.
When you look at untreated mental health issues, when you look at unwellness in our communities, all those lead into substance use disorder. And if we use this tragedy as an opportunity to address those upstream causes, then we'll solve not only the opioid epidemic, but so many other health woes that are afflicting our country.
Adams says part of the strategy is helping people understand that health affects all aspects of our society, including the economy.
Investing in health is also investing in jobs. It's also investing in safety and security. It's investing in the things that they care about and that they vote on. And that if we don't invest in those things, it's going to continue to be a drag on our economy, on our safety, on our ability to devote resources to the things that we care about.
Adams says to accomplish these larger goals, communities need to focus on developing new partnerships with businesses, the faith community, and treatment providers that use limited funding more efficiently and effectively. Adams will be a guest on Line 1 Your Health Connection tomorrow at 10 a.m. on Alaska Public Media. And it's not just the Surgeon General. This week, top military brass are visiting bases in Anchorage. On Wednesday, Secretary of the Army Dr. Mark Esper is holding a short press conference at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Republican Senator Dan Sullivan, who sits on the Armed Services Committee, will also be present. The next day, Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson will be at JBEAR. Late summer is typically when high-ranking federal officials make stops in Alaska and other parts of the country far from the capital.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The Haines Highway sees a lot of traffic in the summertime as people make trips for various events and festivals. Many tourists make the journey as part of the so-called Golden Circle, a road trip that passes through Skagway, Whitehorse, and Haines. Some Haines residents drive up to Whitehorse for services or products that can't be found in town. But if you don't own a car, finding a way to get to Whitehorse from Haines can be challenging. For years, there hasn't been any regular transportation service between the two cities. David Simmons is hoping to change that with his new business, Hinterland Express. KHNS's Henry Leisha reports.
Simmons says he first got the idea to start a shuttle service between Haines and Whitehorse after he needed to make the trip himself. He recently moved to Haines from Bavaria and takes regular trips to Germany throughout the year.
There's a direct flight with Condor from Frankfurt to Whitehorse. I can take that. That's great. No 36-hour layovers in Seattle, Juneau Airport, and sleeping on the floor there and everything. Just go right to Whitehorse. But then I realized, there's no connection, public transport between Whitehorse and Haines.
Initially, he thought most of his passengers would be German tourists who had taken the flight from Frankfurt.
The more I've been speaking about this new business of mine to people around town, the more I'm also realizing that, there's a lot of people who need something from Whitehorse. So I'm starting to see more and more locals who actually can use the service as well, and it's not just the German tourists who are coming in.
In the late 40s, the now-defunct O'Hara bus lines briefly offered service between the two cities, and tours operating out of Whitehorse have offered transportation to Haines in the past. These days, transportation options are limited for people who don't own cars. Transport to Whitehorse is available from Skagway through Fraser, BC, on the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. But this option is only available as part of a tour package. Other than that, travelers must rent a car. Simmons Business, Hinterland Express, will offer regular service between Haines and Whitehorse with one stop in Haines Junction as well. So far, he has made one trip this season. He carried one passenger from Haines to the Yukon. Passengers must have a valid passport that allows for entry into Canada and the United States, and appropriate visas if applicable. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
The village of Togiak has Bristol Bay's smallest and latest salmon run, but it broke through 1980's total run record of 1.2 million sockeye on Monday. KDLG's Austin Fast joined a SetNet crew this weekend in Togiak and brings us this report.
26-year-old Whitney Carlos and her aunt Martha Fox can't stop laughing as they untangle sticks, moss, and a few salmon from Whitney's SetNet in Togiak Bay.
Sticks!
What a catch!
Come in the morning, that's when my net has been.
After fishing for days in the rain and the wind, the pair are basking in the sun's rays. They just can't get over it.
It's a beautiful day. We haven't had sunshine
in over 2 weeks. And I was in such a good mood and my net was like this. Except there were more sticks and more green. I said, whatever, net, you're not going to ruin my day. I'm in a beautiful mood.
Martha's brother, Ernest Wassily, helps haul the net by hand over the shallow 19-foot skiff. They make quick work picking out sockeye, pinks, and prehistoric-looking chum salmon.
And their teeth are so sharp, and once you, like, clear the body, it'll just start spinning itself.
Like an alligator.
Look at the teeth.
Whitney pops the gills to bleed out the sockeye and drops them into a plastic tub filled with ice. As darkness falls, the crew heads to the beach to drop off their catch with Copper River Seafoods. They all look up at the brailer bags full of salmon, trying to guess how much it weighs.
Maybe 250, 275, or less.
It's more than they expect. 343 pounds of sockeye drop in the icy totes to head across the road for processing. An unprecedented number of fish has been passing through the Togiak processor this summer. On its best week, Copper River clocked 430,000 pounds of sockeye through its doors, a new record. The run came in several days late for Bristol Bay's east side, and the same thing's happening out west in Togiak. But unlike other fisheries in the bay this summer, the 30 or so drift net boats that fish Togiak don't have to worry about hundreds of fishermen from the Nooshigak descending on them when the fishing gets good. Fishermen who've cast nets in other districts can't transfer to Togiak until after July 27th. Area management biologist Tim Sands says this helps preserve the artisanal nature of Togiak's fishery.
Almost everybody that fishes in Togiak is connected to Togiak. There's not a lot of outside boats that go there and fish. So it's just more of a traditional fishery than other places where there's, you know, bramming and jamming.
Even though Togiak's run is the smallest in Bristol Bay, it still provides a good amount of income for local fishermen. Both Martha and Whitney say more and more people from Togiak are beginning to commercial SetNet with help from a permit loan program from the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. Whitney hopes other young people will take advantage of this resource to become more self-sufficient.
Jobs here are really limited because a lot of people depend on fishing for their yearly income. Now that I'm older and have the experience, you know, I want my own permit and, you know, to do it on my own. And I feel like everyone, when you have the resources, are going to go out and try to get it.
Togiak's fishing typically peaks mid-July, but the season's best harvest has been 43,000 fish on August 2nd. Martha says they'll check nets for another 2 weeks or until they spot the one sea creature they don't want to see.
No jellyfish yet.
Yeah, that's
we start seeing small, tiny jellyfish.
Yet. And that means the fishing is over. The cash from commercial fishing may be nice, but Whitney says fishing's about more than that. She loves the subsistence elements as well.
We make dried salmon, canned salmon, salmon jerky, plus getting to be with my family, and it's better than hitting the gym every day.
And she's getting plenty of family time this summer. As midnight approaches, she and Martha aren't heading home to get some well-deserved rest. They're jumping out of their skiff to prepare for a baby shower they're throwing the next day. Life doesn't stop just because the fish are finally in. In Togiak, I'm Austin Fast.
traditional Sugpiak artist Andrew Abayo visited Kodiak over the weekend as a guest of the Aleutic Museum and Archaeological Repository. He participated in Kodiak's first Friday events and on Saturday hosted an atlatl throwing demonstration at the museum.
The atlatl was used by the Sugpiak and also the Unangak, actually all the different cultures of Alaska. And primarily it was used in the kayak. And that is actually not an Alaskan native word. It's an Aztec word. For the Sugpiak, we call it the Nugach. Not too many people were familiar with it, and it's a good way for me to introduce our people to the culture.
An atlatl is a spear-throwing weapon used for hunting around the world. Abayo is primarily a wood carver making masks, weapons, and kayaks. The Aleutic Museum has a pair of Abayo's pieces in their permanent collection, a war shield and a war club. Abayo says he did not grow up with carving but had always admired it. Then he discovered his talent through a workshop.
I got home one evening and I got a call from my mom, and she told me that she paid for a workshop for me at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. And you don't want to say no to mom. So I went, and I discovered that I could carve these, and it just comes right out, and it was natural, and so it kind of grew from there.
The workshop, Abayo says, was with his uncle, Peter Lind. Abayo is originally from Pilot Point on the Alaska Peninsula. He says when he is not traveling and teaching, he can be found working on his current project, building a model Anyak, an open-skin boat similar to the Umiak, at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage. Abayo's visit was supported by a museum initiative to incubate and test innovative approaches to create fun and engaging programming to expand its audience. Finally, a correction tonight to a story Thursday about earthworms in the interior. A Fairbanks High School student did not discover a new earthworm species, rather one that is thought to have never been seen before in the region. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Aaron McKinstry and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Christy Schallenberger in Bethel, Ann Hillman in Palmer, Abby Collins and Henry Leisha in Haines, Austin Fast in Togiak, and Daisha Eaton in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, investing in Alaska by hosting local interns and donating to University of Alaska programs like the UAA Summer Engineering Academy. More at bp.com/Alaska. You know your teenager is struggling. Friends have changed, grades have dropped, and when you try to talk, they argue or ignore you. Don't wait until it gets worse. Take action by calling Alaska Crossings. Alaska Crossings has helped hundreds of teens gain back their confidence and self-esteem in a fun outdoor environment. The program is now accepting applications for troubled teens ages 12 to 18. Visit alaskacrossings.org and apply today. Alaska Crossings, youth succeed here. This message sponsored by Alaska Crossings.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.